Okay, thanks, Jude, for the lovely introduction, and thanks, to everybody that came along. I see my nearest secular neighbors, Eugene and friend, are here, and a few more that told me they'd come along. I hope, well, I know you won't be disappointed because you won't be listening to me for 30 or 40 minutes. No way. I had to do a Father of the Bride speech 2 weeks ago. That was a bit of a test, but I managed to do it. I'd done it from the father and mother of the bride. I thought I'd be different. I thought I'd be like a kind of new man about it, and it went okay. But it there was problems with the microphone, problems with this and that and the other. Anyway. It's easier here. It's a lot easier here. 45 years is a good bit. I didn't know I'd ever make that when I started. And I got the first 35 years in regular AA, in traditional AA. And it's just about 10 years now since I went to my first secular meeting. And when I came into AA back in 1980, I was a secular person. I had stopped all going religion and stuff like that. Since I was 16 years old, which would have been 10 years, I was 26 when I came to AA. And of course, that brought up all sorts of stuff. When I come in and listened to people asking for help in the morning and thinking at night, and with a lot of people, that's all there was to it. That was it. That's all you done. And you had a great life then after that, and that was it. That was mostly the message. And I thought, can this be serious? Can this be serious? And I thought, well, I was in a kind of I joined in a place called Bray. It's a few miles south of Dublin, and I thought, I knew that Bray was quite a religious community, and I thought perhaps when I get into, you know, when I get a chance and I get into Dublin, it won't be the same. It won't be like this. But it's like that everywhere. It's like that everywhere, and to this day, it's still the same, except. If you get out of it, if you get out of it and find this side of AA, and there's so many ways one can look at it. Like most of the religions, Catholic one is the one I know. If you don't toe the line and do what they say and do what they suggest, you might end up in burning in the everlasting flames of hell, and if you do everything they say and you keep the rules, you're going to end up in heaven. Well, it is a little bit like that. If you don't drink, you go to, or I mean, sorry, if you don't do the program and ask for help and get down on your knees and all that, what you've got in front of you is possibly the gates of madness and death. I think that's written down in words like that, which is kind of AA hell, and then you've got AA heaven where you stay sober and everything's wonderful, and none of those extremes are really much use. In our everyday life, going from one extreme to another. So I'm very grateful that I found secondary in London, in the place called the Angel, aptly named, and it kind of it turned over a new leaf for me in my sobriety. I still come to AA. I suppose that's partly due to me first 35 in AA, because you get a bit afraid to leave it. You get a bit afraid to leave because you get conditioned, that meeting makers make it, and people who slip had stopped going to meetings, and you hear all that. And I've got that condition, and now I'll hardly lose it. But I don't know if that's necessary for newcomers. I don't think so. In fact, I don't think it is. But I've kind of got it now. I don't go as much as I used to. Since I retired, I've cut back on meetings quite a bit. I don't go during the day again. When Tusnua started, I was there nearly every day, but I actually had a broken leg that time, and I was lying on a bed, so it was I needed something to do anyway. But since I got my legs back, and I'm able to do a bit of gardening and go out for a ride on my bike and do various things, I only occasionally go during the day. I go mostly at night. I like Tusnua. This is great. I mean, I hope it lasts. Long may it last. It's a great little community. You don't seem to have to be with the in crowd or out crowd, you know. It's like it's the same for everyone. I've noticed in my way through AA over years, you know, that you'll get an in crowd and an outside crowd. In fact, when I joined, I was a country bumpkin kind of joining AA in Bray, which is near Dublin. And if a country man joins in Dublin or near it, most of the members will be dubs, as we call them, you know, the most of them will be from Dublin. And they'll immediately bring you and put you with another countryman, you know, because it's like there's a bias there, you know. The townies don't want to mix with the country people. And that seems to be all over the world with all different reasons for it, you know. I would have felt that. I would have felt the odd one out. Even going to school, there was a hierarchy, you know, between the children in the school. And especially when I went to secondary school was in the local town, and people that came from the country were bog men. And of course, the people from the town, they were up there, they were fine, you know. And then, you know, that idea that we were bog men would filter down to the people from the country, and the people nearest the bog would be lesser than the people not quite as near, you know. It's a peculiar human trait that we all like to feel that little bit better than the next fella, you know. And that's recorded in the big book too. I've tried to put that away. I've tried to not to let it apply in my life, but I can never say that I've completely achieved anything, because all these things, I think, are come via evolution. You know, we've evolved to be the way we are, and it takes a long time to change that. It took a long time to evolve into what we are, you know, and it won't change overnight. We can do our best to change things. And we can make some changes, you know. I think I've made changes, and then I found I'm back doing the same thing again, with time, you know. But yeah, I have improved a lot. My life improved from the day I stopped drinking immensely, you know. I like what one member says, you know, that once you stop drinking, it solved 85% of my problems, you know. But the other 15 were enough to be left with, you know. Life went very well for me for my stop drinking, really. I can't say that I haven't had any major problem that I wasn't able to get a fairly good re resolution for it, you know. I've been very lucky that I met my wife, oh, a couple of years before I got sober, so she did see me what I was like when I drank, you know. She didn't even barely know all of it. The night I met her, I met in a pub, and I was out for having a drink with a cousin, one of my cousins. So we met another cousin, and there was a girl along with her. And this was maybe on a Tuesday or Wednesday night. So of course, I didn't remember any of it. I was drunk. I didn't remember any of it. But I did meet the cousin that I was out having a drink with. And I knew something had happened, you know. I knew we'd been talking to somebody, but I couldn't remember who they were. But I was good at this. I tentatively got around it with my cousin, you know, until I found out who we had met and what had taken place. But I said, "Yeah, we met Mary and Eileen." He says, "We're meeting them again on Friday night, you know." And I says, "Oh, grand, you know." And so we did. We met them again on Friday night, and I didn't get as drunk on Friday night, or at least I wasn't drunk starting off. And that's how I met my wife. You know, I didn't really remember the first night I met her. So life is kind of strange. You know, you need a bit of luck along the way, and that was probably one of the luckiest bits of one of the luckiest things that happened to me looking back. She was going to leave me if I didn't get sober. She was a big part of the reason why I got sober. But I stayed long enough, you know, to learn that I needed to stay sober for myself, you know. And you know, so one needs to learn that fairly soon, I think, you know, because other people let us down, and other things let us down. And if we're staying sober for somebody else and they let us down, and then we drink and then we blame them, well, that doesn't really get us anywhere, does it? You know, we need to be getting sober for ourselves We've got nobody to blame but ourselves, really, who would have a drink. And we need to kind of know that, because we're not fooling anybody. No. I picked that up fairly quick. I was told it and I thought about it and I understood it and I understand it still, that it's very important to stay sober for oneself, for not to take a drink under any circumstances, to staying sober, staying clean, clean is the most important thing in my life. Whatever is wrong at the moment will not be improved by me taking a drink. It will almost certainly be made worse. And there's no doubt about that in my life. There's no doubt. I mean, even after all this time, I couldn't undo all the faith that people have in me, by just getting drunk once, And if I picked up a drink, I'd more than likely get drunk. I could never drink. I was a very poor drinker when I drank. But as I say, I didn't let that stop me. I kept trying to be a good drinker. Because as a young Irishman working over in England, where we all met in pubs and being a good drinker, people who were good drinkers were looked up to. So it was like a, it was like an achievement. Somebody that could drink, for 3 days in a row without getting too drunk, that sort of thing. But it's achievement, it's something I never achieved. I got drunk regularly. The story in the big book about the jaywalker fitted me exactly, or should I say, I fitted it exactly. I kept going back for more punishment, all the time. And some people will say, okay, you got into AA young. And I did hear somebody say that soon after I came in. I heard somebody say, God, aren't they getting, aren't they coming into AA very young now? They couldn't have suffered as much as we did. I felt kind of resentful about that, because I felt that I had suffered quite a lot. I felt terrible at the time. It was early days. And I felt pretty bad. But, there was some truth in what she said. It is good to get in early. I had a lot more going for me than I realized, at that time. I thought I was pretty bad. I was threatened with losing the girlfriend. I had already lost the place I was staying in. I was kind of under observation at work, for my behavior. And I thought things were pretty bad. I didn't think it could get any worse. Once I started to get well, I realized I had a lot going for me. I was still young. I still had plenty of time and left in front of me, and lots of things like that. There is lots of advantages. I'm sure there has to be lots of advantages in getting sober as early as possible. And if you're going to be an addict, I didn't think about what I was going to say this evening because. I didn't. I never know what to think of, or what might be of any benefit to somebody. Everybody here, I think, mostly is sober a long time. And the other thing that's happened as well as me staying sober a long time is I've got a good bit older. I'm 72 now, and coping with those things it's coping with getting older. My daughter gave me a book by Dr. Maureen Gaffney, and she has divided our lives up into a lot more stages than Shakespeare did. But coming up near where my age is anyway, she puts down middle age as 50 to late 60s, and then late adulthood from late 60s to late 70s. So, and old age then from 80 onwards. So, my doctor had to ring the hospital one day I was there. And he said, "I've got an elderly man with me here," which was like kind of new for me because it's only starting now, that I'm getting this kind of elderly, elder. What is it? Not elder abuse, but it's been treated as as an elder. Like it's not that great of a, when it starts. I've got an older sister, Sheila. She's 9 years, I think, older than me. But she keeps herself very well. She is very young looking for an 80-year-old. or 81, coming 81, and we got on the bus. I go over to visit her in London occasionally, and we got on the bus not so long ago, and somebody got up and let me sit down and fucking didn't take any heed of her at all. Like, didn't think she needed to sit, and her 9 years older than me, you know. So she's dining out on that now for a while. She probably expected that I'd get up and let her sit down, but I couldn't do that. There's all sorts of new stuff being talked about in AA now. I mean, most of the years I was in AA, you wouldn't hear any talk about neurodivergence or ADHD or anything like that. I just call it ABCD at here at home, you know, or A to a Z, and pull out any four letters out of it and put them together, and I probably got a bit of it, you know. But it's only now and again that something comes up, you know, that would be actually giving me trouble. If something isn't giving me trouble, I'm not going to poke the bear so much, you know. I'm not going to probably, you know, I may not have enough time left to recover from some of those things, even if I have got them. I got a bit of an example of it in my own life not so long ago. I had a urinary problem, and I had to go to a urologist and have every man's dream. I had to have a cystoscopy, and I went and they had a look around anyway. And thankfully, they didn't find anything wrong. I was in very good shape, but part of that too, I was sent down for an X-ray, and it was incidental on the X-ray that I had gallstones in my gallbladder, you know. So I wouldn't even know it. Only the secretary in my doctor's told me by mistake. So anyway, the next time I was in with my doctor, I said to him, "What about the, you know?" After talking to him about whatever was on the list, I said, "What about the gallstones? You know, I've got a bladder. I've got gallstones." Well, he says, "Have you?" And I said, "Yeah, it was down as an incidental on the X-ray." And he had a look, and he says, "Look," he says, "we don't go looking for problems, you know." He says, "We, if you've got gallstones, you don't take any heed of them unless you've actually got symptoms, unless you're in pain. We just leave them alone because it can do more harm than good." But he says it's different when you've got pain. Well, then we have to do something. So I kind of it's a bit of an analogy, really, for I guess some of the psychological stuff that's going on too. If I can try and think of the other person, you know, I just heard my wife come in there now. She was visiting her sister today. Her younger sister has stage four lung cancer, and it came as a shock only a few weeks ago. And she's 60. She's already lost a younger sister from cancer as well, brain tumor. So I moved into the room so that she wouldn't be, you know, so that I wouldn't be out in the kitchen when she came home. And I made sure I'd done the washing up and had the floor swept and a few things like that before she got home. So I'm particularly aware of how things are for her these days. Because not only is she her younger sister, she kind of reared her. Her mum wasn't well back those years, and my wife done an awful lot of the caring for the younger children, as happens in big families. There was 9 of them. Well, it was 8 survivors, and I know that Mary, my wife, she had to leave school early as well to take care of two latecomers, two much younger sisters that came along. So it's just kind of especially sad for her to see what's going on now, and you know, I have to be mindful of it. For the last few days, we had my youngest daughter here and her husband, who is. You know, she claims she's my favorite, and she probably is. But she and they have a dog. I have this dog Remus that came from a recovery. What do you call it? A dog pound. You know, it was an unwanted dog. So anyway, when they come down, now I like this dog Remus. Call him. I like the dog, but I don't know if any of you got young family that have a dog, and. This dog is like when he comes to the house, he's king. He's fucking king. All the doors in the house have to be left open. He has to be able to go anywhere he likes. It's young people don't treat this dog like we did at all. I was freezing in my own kitchen the other evening, and I wasn't allowed to close the door. I mean, I don't know. I haven't learned yet how to cope with that, you know. And I said to Mary, like, my wife, what are we going to fucking do? You know, look, they'll be gone tomorrow, she said. They'll be gone tomorrow. Just hold on to it. So, you know, that's daily life. Daily life has to be coped with. And it's not always, it doesn't always tell us in the program what we should do, you know. Well, I guess it does, but it doesn't always come to the top, you know. Anyway, I'm going to stop there, Jude. I think I lose track now of myself. I don't even remember where I started now sometimes, so I better finish. Thanks very much, everyone.